Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, February 27th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hiya.
All right, BJ, let's get into the news here. You got to tell me a little bit about Naruto. I'm not entirely certain the pronunciation there. This is an anime project, or I believe it's based on a very popular manga, and now it's getting a live action movie from the director of Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. Tell me a little bit about this project. What do I need to know about this character in this world?
Okay, so what you need to know is that Naruto is one of what is considered like the big three. The big three series that were published in Shonen Jump, which is alongside One Piece and Bleach. One Piece obviously just had its own live action series on Netflix that was really successful, but like Naruto is in another level of popularity. One of the most popular mangas ever made. The anime was a huge deal because it was streamed on Cartoon Network in the 2000s. So this is also a lot of people's in the West's like first big anime love. Naruto is also huge. Like, it's very expansive. There are like hundreds upon hundreds of episodes.
Okay.
So trying to figure out what they're going to do in terms of like bringing this to live action, especially if it's going to be a movie and not a series, will be interesting to see, you know, where they're going to pull from. But the thing that I'm most excited about is that it's being directed by Destin Daniel Cretton, who I really like as a director. I think that he has a very good visual eye. I think he can absolutely pull off a live action anime film. And I'm curious how this will look without having to deal with like the powers that be of Marvel that also, you know, have their input on the movies that they make, because I like Shang-Chi. It's not, you know, the best Marvel movie, but I really like a lot of what's going on there. And so this actually has me very excited, because do we need a Naruto live action? No, but everything is getting made into live action these days, so it's going to happen. So I'm not going to fight it. And I just think that I think it's a good pairing, personally.
Okay. Yeah, the Devin Meenan, who wrote the article for Slash Film, basically said like the fighting styles that appear in Naruto are kind of similar to the fighting styles that appear in Shang-Chi. There's a lot of like martial arts hand-to-hand stuff, but also a lot of like sort of magic lights coming out of your hand kind of stuff too. So yes. It seems like, you know, he's maybe a more of a natural fit that way in terms of the stuff that he's directed before. I know him from Short Term 12, which came out in 2013, and then Shang-Chi. So have you seen The Glass Castle or Just Mercy, his other, I guess, like in between movies before he jumped over to Marvel?
I haven't seen those two. I saw Short Term 12, which was one of my favorite movies that it was released that year, but that is decidedly not like Naruto.
Yeah.
but no, I've not seen the other two.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't either. I need Just Mercy in particular came out in like 2019, and I don't know, it just like fell through the cracks for me. I never got around to checking that one out. I need to seek that out. The only thing I know about Naruto, BJ, is that people run around with their hands out behind their back and kind of like head forward sprint. And there was like a whole thing about like Area 51 and people doing that. I don't know. I was more online then than I am now. So I'm not sure if there have been any other like Naruto meme running movements going on lately, but that's the extent of my knowledge of this. So thanks.
Yeah. Naruto running is very much a thing. It is still incredibly popular with junior high boys. Love to go from class to class doing that, which I think is very, very funny. Naruto also has like some of the best anime food that I've ever seen. So I'm very curious if we're gonna get some good ramen scenes in this movie. Man. I feel like you have to.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Okay. Well, speaking of awesome, True Detective Season 5 has been announced. And Issa Lopez, who was the, as our headline says, the maestro of True Detective Night Country, the fourth season, is coming back to sort of reprise her role as the showrunner and sort of like chief creative voice of this new season of True Detective. What did you make of True Detective Season 4? I assume you... of AKA Night Country. I assume you caught up with that. Mm-hmm. And then what do you think about Issa Lopez coming back for a fifth season?
I really enjoyed my time with Night Country because I really love the first season. Like, I think what Nick Pizzolatto did is pretty brilliant. I really did not like season 2 or season 3 at all. I liked the performances. I hated the story. Mm-hmm. So Night Country was something extremely different. It felt very much like the inverse of season 1, going from being, you know, this really hot Louisiana landscape to now this like very, very frigid Alaskan, going from two like different forms of toxic male detectives into messy feminine detectives. I really, really enjoyed my time with like that juxtaposition. I also love the incorporation of supernatural elements. That's always going to be something that I like. So I did really, really like this, but there's also been a lot of talk about how originally this was not pitched as a True Detective story and it was made into a True Detective story. So that's why there are those callbacks from, you know, season 4 into season 1. Mm-hmm. I am very excited to see what Issa Lopez does with season 5 and, you know, hopefully does not have the restrictions that it needs to call back in any way to the previous seasons. And she can just make her own story, because Tigers Are Not Afraid is one of the best movies I've ever seen. And she is so brilliant and builds these really complex worlds. And I'm very excited to see what she does for it. And what I also think is, you know, on a pettier note, very exciting is that people have been dogging on this season, like very intensely online. Like, it seems like every single Sunday, my feed was just flooded with people being like over the moon, hating this season. And yet this is the most popular season the show has ever had. And that is why it got greenlit so quickly, because it's doing huge numbers for HBO. So clearly the internet is not, you know, the arbiter of how the real world works, because people really, really loved this season. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very excited to see what she comes up with for next season. I know this is also part of an overall deal with HBO, so she's going to start doing other things that are not True Detective related, which is also very exciting to me. This is just good news all around as far as I'm concerned. And considering what a big baby Nick Pizzolatto has been acting like on Instagram over this show being successful, like, even if I hated this show, I would still be championing it just to stick it to him for acting like such a child.
Yeah, yeah. You can read, I think we've covered a little bit of that on Slash Film over the past few weeks, where, yeah, his reactions to the success of the show were not what you want from somebody who is purportedly an adult man.
Yeah, no,
so
sit at home, collect your exec producer checks. Like, no one needs this. No one needs you complaining in Notes app, please.
Speaking of Notes app, like, while you were talking, I literally opened my Notes app and wrote down Tigers Are Not Afraid in there, because I'd heard that she had directed that movie before, and I've never seen it, but you saying that it's one of your favorite movies of all time, I'm like, holy crap, all right, I'm
it's
like literally
so
writing
good.
This down so I can check it out.
It's
so
incredible.
Okay, that's good to know. And then, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think I very much enjoyed the fourth season. I know that, like, you know, it has some highs and lows in there, but and in terms of like the mystery and whether or not you thought that was like a satisfying ending or whatever, I thought, like, I enjoyed the journey and the milieu and all of that, like, and Jodie Foster and Callie Reese, like, so much that I was just like basically on board with what was going on, even if I didn't love like every single second of it. And yeah, I'm so curious to see what she does, knowing that whatever she does next, you know, she will have the knowledge from the jump that it is a true detective project. So like what the next season looks like, I think is going to be much more representative of what Issa Lopez does with a true detective property, instead of, like you said, sort of retrofitting a different project into the true detective world. And whether or not that means that HBO has a series of requirements for her of like, okay, you know, a true detective project has to have X, Y, and Z or whatever, or whether that's her being able to sort of seed in those references a little bit more organically, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, mm-hmm. I'm very curious to know what that looks like, where everybody's on the same page from the beginning instead of, you know, doing a creative job, but also, yeah, retrofitting something into, you know, under like an existing franchise umbrella. So, okay. The other project that I wanted to mention here is sort of in the DC Warner Brothers Discovery world, or HBO Warner Brothers Discovery world, and that's a DC project, which is an upcoming DC animated film. There's a rumor that an animated movie called Jurassic League is in the works, that James Gunn, who is the co-head of DC Studios now, is set to produce, and a guy named Brian Lynch, who worked on the Secret Life of Pets movies and Minions movies and Puss in Boots, is going to be writing. Jurassic League is based on a 2022 limited 6-issue run of a DC Comics property, where the main heroes of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are envisioned as literal dinosaurs. And you can see some photos of what these characters look like online. Very interesting. And I've never read this actual comic book before, but, yeah, they're like actually dinosaurs here. So, I don't really know what to do with this information, BJ. Like, are you like on board with this as a concept? It seems like it's geared a little bit more toward kids than, you know, trying to be like all things to all people, like so many of these four quadrant blockbusters often have to be. But what do you make of this?
I'm so excited about this. And it's solely because Brian Lynch is the one that's in charge of it, because I know most people are going to know him from Minions and Puss in Boots and Secret Life of Pets. And I think Secret Life of Pets is like severely underrated. That movie's way funnier than it has any business being. But Brian Lynch is also one, a great Twitter follow. He's hilarious. But he's also worked on comics before. He worked on Spider-Man Unlimited Volume 3. He worked on the comics for Spike and Angel, as in like the Buffy characters and the Angel characters, as well as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles micro series. So he knows how to do the superhero thing really well and has proven it in comics, but also he's worked in spaces where movies are geared towards children. So I think that knowing James Gunn's sensibility and how he is not someone who's ever going to talk down to children, I'm very excited to see Brian Lynch get to work in a sandbox where he might be able to like get away with things like a little bit edgier than say like a Minions movie, but still, you know, age appropriate. I think this will be really fun, and the premise is like dumb as hell, and that makes me excited.
Did you ever see, I think it was called Teen Titans Go to the Movies?
Oh yeah, Teen Titans Go to the Movies rules. It's okay, so good.
I've never seen that, but I know it has a good reputation, and that is something that I'm thinking of just in terms of like the broadest possible strokes of, you know, a superhero thing aimed toward a younger audience that might gain like some sort of cult following, or at least like gain acceptance in sort of the wider geek sphere outside of, you know, just parents like taking their kids to the movies to shut them up for a little bit. You know what I mean? So
totally. And Lynch was a producer on the Lego Batman movie as well. So that's, for me, that's like the sense of humor I think they're going to be chasing. And I think that that is just, I think it's smart. I think it's a really smart idea.
I didn't know about that credit. Yeah. That makes me, I'm like not as big of a fan of this Secret Life of Pets stuff as you are. And I've not engaged with any Minion stuff, but I loved the Lego Batman movie. So hearing that he was a producer on that is, yeah, very encouraging. So, and obviously there's a DC connection there too. So, okay, well, let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about some more film and TV news.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, BJ, we wrote about this years ago, but I had kind of forgotten that Game of Thrones was supposed to end with a trilogy of movies, and HBO killed that plan. Had you ever heard this before? Did you remember this story?
Yeah, so it's so interesting, and I think we all have the same sort of understanding, which is that Game of Thrones is a show a lot of us were really obsessed with for 10 years of our life, and then just immediately purged it from our brains because the ending whiffed it so hard. So when we started writing about this again, it all kind of came flooding back of, oh, that's right. There was a completely different plan here that didn't happen.
Yeah. So David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the, I guess, co-creators of the show, the showrunners of the series, basically told HBO, hey, the way that we want to end this is by doing three movies that are going to be released theatrically. And HBO came back and said, hey, HBO stands for home box office, not away box office. So no, you're not actually going to do that. You're going to make two more seasons of the show. So, I mean, you know, on one hand, like maybe granting the creators the ability to tell the story in the way that they wanted could potentially have resulted in a better ending than the one that we got. But on the other hand, that is basically condensing 13 episodes from the final two seasons into three movies, which, like, even if they're 3 hours long or something, there's a lot of hours that are cut out of that would have been cut out of that experience. And I think people generally feel like seasons 7 and 8 were incredibly rushed, you know, in their current forms, let alone being truncated even further into movies. So, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like don't really understand how they could have put, like, even possibly told that story of the final two seasons and three movies. Do you have any sense, like, thinking back, you know, you're saying you blocked it out and some of that stuff came rushing back in, thinking about like the shape of those final two seasons? Do you have any idea, like, if that could have worked at all?
The only thing that I could think of is that maybe there would have been, like, a movie for each of, like, the major moments of, like, the major, you know, battle with the White Walkers, the major issues with Daenerys going ham, and mm-hmm. the major crowning of Bran. Like, I feel like that would have been it, but I don't know why. Like, I don't see the point why, because you're totally right, those last seasons do feel kind of rushed. You also can't see half of it. Yeah. So that would have been an even worse theatrical experience.
I didn't even think about that, like how bad the theatrical presentation, I mean, still is now, but definitely was even in 2019, like pre-pandemic, it was bad. Like, I remember people complaining about it all the time, like the bulbs being dim at AMC theaters across the country, things like that. So yeah, that would have been, watching the Long Night episode would have been, or I guess movie in this case, would have probably been pretty disastrous, but
yeah. All I can think is, like, was this their way to try to, like, shoehorn in, like, hey guys, we can make movies too. Hey Marvel, you want to give us money to make movies? We can make movies. Like,
that's
the only thing I can think of as why you would even pitch this. Also, whoever gave the not home box office or home box office, not away box office, they probably have been sitting on that line for like 5 years, just waiting for the chance to use it, because it's a good one.
Yeah, that's true. yeah, I wonder, like, I don't remember exactly when Benioff and Weiss were attached to direct their Star Wars trilogy of movies, but it might have been around that same time. So I wonder if, yeah, they're thinking about maybe using the experience of directing these as movies as like a bridge into directing a Star Wars trilogy or something like that. I'll have to go back and check the dates on that. But yeah, I guess ultimately I'm glad that this didn't happen. I still stand by the coverage that Jacob and I did of the end of Game of Thrones, the final two seasons. We did like a lot of recaps and a lot of coverage on Slash Film that still exists. You can go back and check that stuff out if you happen to be like revisiting the show or anything. But I think he and I didn't hate it as much as everybody else, but we still kind of are pouring one out for the fact that like it was obviously rushed to the conclusion. So
yeah, absolutely.
I know that like, yeah, I feel like everybody else has kind of like you said, written the show off completely. And I feel like there's so much good stuff in there that I hesitate to do that, even though I was not satisfied by the ending, really. I was satisfied more than a lot of other people, I guess. But yeah, I guess that's neither here nor there. Okay, a couple other stories to discuss here. Tom Cruise has signed up for a top secret movie with the director of The Revenant. His name is Alejandro González Iñárritu. And he has made a lot of movies that I don't really like, BJ. But one movie, The Revenant, that I really, really did like a lot. He made Birdman. He made 21 Grams back in the day. Most recently, he directed Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths back in 2022. That was the Spanish language movie. And now he's going to be making another English language movie. It's like a top secret thing. Nobody knows exactly what it's about. It's supposed to be an original story, but it has Tom Cruise like top lining this movie, which is a very exciting thing because, you know, even regardless of how you feel about Iñárritu or his films, Tom Cruise, like, I guess if you just look at the data of Tom Cruise's career over the past 20 years, he's really only worked with a very, very small number of filmmakers a bunch of times and kind of bounced back and forth between like his guys. And the idea that he would be now willing under his new deal at Warner Brothers to open things up a little bit and step outside of his comfort zone and work with a director that he's never worked with before. And somebody who previously in The Revenant directed Leonardo DiCaprio to his only Oscar win is very exciting to me, like creatively for Tom Cruise. What do you make of this?
So I am of two minds in that one, as a director, Iñárritu is not one of my favorites, but what's weird is, okay, I'm going to say something and it's going to sound incredibly crass, but the best way that I can describe his filmography to me is that like, it's the equivalent of dry humping. Like when it's happening, I'm like, this is great. And then when it's over, I'm like, I wanted more. That's how I feel about every film he's ever made.
Wow. Okay. This is new territory, Vijay. I've never heard a director refer to it or a filmography referred to in those terms, but it's kind of brilliant. I understand exactly what you mean.
See, like you get it exactly. And like, that's why it's crass because there's no other real good way for me to explain what I mean by it. Because when I'm watching his movies, I'm like, hell yeah, this is awesome. And then it's over and I'm like, oh, that's the thing I did. Okay. So I'm not super sold on, you know, what the story might entail, but I am always super sold on my favorite problematic Scientologist, Tom Cruise, because he's brilliant and he's a superstar. And this does, to me, feel like he didn't get an Oscar for Mission Impossible. So now he's really going for one. And I have missed that Tom Cruise. I have missed the Tom Cruise who feels like he is hungry for something. And I want to see what that Tom Cruise can pull off.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I love, you know, his action stuff and I hope he keeps making that, but I'm just very excited about him potentially returning to like more of a zone where he drops in every once in a while and just like checks in with different types of filmmakers and makes different types of movies. So this is like, I think when he signed that deal with Warner Brothers, a lot of people were like, oh, this is basically just like nothing. This is no more than just like a fluffy press release to make David Zaslav look good and make it seem like he cares about the movies or whatever. You know, setting Zaslav and all of that nonsense aside, I think this is actually, it seems to be, this announcement anyway, seems to me to confirm that Cruise is actually serious about entering a new era in his career. So I'm really excited about that. Okay, last thing. Lionsgate evidently wants to remake American Psycho. We don't really have much more information on this than that. I think this was kind of like tossed off in another report or something, that this line of like, hey, Lionsgate wants to do this. But I don't know. This is one of those things that, like, American Psycho came out in 2000. Mary Harron directed this movie based on Bret Easton Ellis's novel. Christian Bale, pre-Batman, is like one of his better performances. And this movie, like, holds a very special place in a lot of people's movie-going lives. It's a pretty extreme movie in some ways. It's a pretty out there movie in some ways. It's a really funny movie. It's just like a very singular type of thing. So the idea of a remake, I'm guessing, will strike people in different ways. Where do you fall on this, BJ?
I think that it's an incredibly good idea on one condition. It has to once again be written and directed by women, because part of the success of American Psycho is its subversion in how it presents this character that is, you know, toxic masculinity incarnate, and that is only really capable because it is being written from the perspective of people who exclusively are on the receiving end of these kinds of guys' behavior. And so I think that we are in a new realm where, like, crypto bros and, like, AI bros, like, that is a perfect landscape to have a new Patrick Bateman and show that, like, they're not always these Gordon Gekko type of guys. Like, they are, you know, these guys that walk around in, like, hoodies because they look casual, but the hoodies actually cost like $500. Yeah. Like, I think that's a really, really good entry point for a new American Psycho and a new take on it. But I am also lamenting the fact that I feel like, yet again, the same way that people did with the original American Psycho, it's just going to breed an entire new generation of boys who take the wrong message from this movie. But I very firmly believe that it needs to be written and directed by women once again. There's a reason the first one is a masterpiece.
Hannah Shaw Williams, for Slash Film, wrote a really great article about basically how this is not maybe the terrible idea that it seems on its surface because of exactly what you said, that the sort of culture that we're in right now. Like, she can totally, she says in this article, basically, like, imagining Patrick Bateman, I guess, protagonist of that story, as like an influencer who, instead of like getting flustered by his rivals having a better business card than him, gets like pissed off that people have more followers than him or something like that, right? Like, there's so many connective points that you can have to what's going on today and the types of like cultural figures we have today that Patrick Bateman could slot into. I have to admit that when I first read that, I was like, oh man, I don't really want to see a movie about an influencer or something. But I'm guessing in the year 2000, when this movie came out, or maybe the late to mid to late 90s or whatever, when it was in development, that people who read the plot synopsis or whatever about the original American Psycho movie were probably like, a movie about like a yuppie guy? Like, I don't really want to see that either. You know what I mean? And like, that movie turned into a classic. So maybe I'm wrong there. I don't know. What do you think about like my, I guess, aversion to leaning so hard into the specificity of like influencer culture? Do you think it's going to just make this movie like a time capsule that that potentially could be its own classic? Or do you have some of that same hesitation on your end?
I think that it, again, it's going to very much depend on how it's going to be handled, because I think some filmmakers are still very much struggling on how to incorporate screen life elements into their stories without it feeling a little bit hacky. The two that I think that are done really well, and, you know, no surprise to anyone, are both social media movies, or are both like social media horror movies, is Sissy, which is on Shudder, and it's about a female influencer who's friends know that she's lying on the internet, and it's like, that's not who you are, like, that persona you have, that's not you, and it slowly makes her kind of go crazy. And then Spree with Joe Keery from Stranger Things, where it is like just a rampage, and it's all live streamed. Those two movies I think are really good at handling this sort of like influencer landscape of, you know, the quest to be the biggest on the internet. So I think we have the ability for this to work well, but the problem is, like, if you're not careful, then it does just turn into he's all that, and nobody wants that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Hannah mentions the fact that like this could be coming in the wake of things like Succession and The Wolf of Wall Street and Parasite, you know, projects that sort of lampoon the lack of empathy in the ultra wealthy. makes a lot of sense for like what a modern American Psycho might look like. So I encourage everybody to read her article there. So I'll just link to that in the show notes and you can check that out. I think that's going to do it for today's show. You can read much more about all the things that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe to our newsletter. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.